It is Wednesday, June 7th, 1713 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here with you. And from 1975, we have Elton John playing the music and writing the music, and Bernie Taupin writing the words to the song, which was a big hit in 1975. It's called, well, before I tell you that, let's see how big a hit it was. I know it was a big hit. In Canada, it was number 2 in the RPM top singles. In the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S., it was number 4. In the Cashbox top 100 in the U.S., it was number 1. This is Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Elton John.
Listen to me, good.
Absolutely fantastic. From the album Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, 1975. I was in grade 13 in that year, but I also went to university in that year. First year university, 1975. Released in June, in the summer of that year. In between when I graduated from high school and when I went to first year engineering physics at Queen's University in Kingston. And that song brings back a lot of memories. Traditional history may have us believe that Memnon of the epic tale of Homer lived at the time of an earlier Trojan War. This said to have ended in about 1183 BCE. We have provided evidence from Newton and Crosthwaite on a multitude of fronts, which date this end 888 BCE. This does not mean that we espouse all of their dates. But the correct dating of Phidon, P-H-E-I-D-O-N, as the 11th in descent from Hercules, together with the Spartan kings and other supporting evidence, prove that the Trojan War ending 888 BCE is a true dating for it, and hence it could not have been as early as 1183 BCE. Traditional history, moreover, has provided us with an excellent genealogy in agreement with the 888 BCE date for our BG Fall of Troy, with Fall of Troy in italics. 4. Alcibiades, or Alcibiades, army general of Athens who died in battle in 404 BCE, is in certain lineal descent from Cleisthenes, the first tyrant of Sicyon, who aided in a sacred war on Kira in 595. At 33 years per generation, and Cleisthenes the tyrant, 5 full generations before Alcibiades, born 450, then Cleisthenes is born about 615 BCE and aged 20 in 595. Herodotus dates Phidon contemporary with Cleisthenes, naming Phidon's son Leocedes as a suitor of Agarista. Agarista was the daughter of Cleisthenes. Shoshank I also reigned from 993 BCE, 980 BCE alone, this year one being closely connected to the Trojan War date. A change in one date can have cataclysmic consequences to history as a whole, as we are only too aware, so we wish to be most diligent and not to escape the truth. It is usual in the accounts of ancient historians to find little agreement amongst them and less accuracy. However, the usual problem with inaccuracy is in this case greatly alleviated by the congruence of sources. In this case, all roads lead to Rome, in the sense that the founding of Rome in 842 BCE, the date we found, is more consistent with archaeology and Troy, ending 888. There are some footnotes. Morris Servius Honoratus dated the founding of Rome as 40 years after the founding of Carthage. Thus, Carthage in our chronology would date to 882 BCE, which is year 7 of Pygmalion from Josephus. And when Dido met Aeneas in Virgil would be 881 BCE, the 7th summer after Troy fell. In the fall of 888 BCE in the BG chronology, our chronology is consistent with the year 1 of Hiram of 1036 BCE and a temple, quote, building, unquote, start of 1024 BCE, as we explain in paragraph 11.1, and is only 1 year too low when the 737 years Solanus gives of Carthage for duration is added to its 146 BCE date of destruction. Since Strabo gives Phidon as 10th from Temenus, who is 5th from Heracles, this seems to date Phidon 13 full generations after Heracles, or 364 years. Thus, Phidon, flourishing in 570, dates Heracles in 934. The lineage between Cleisthenes and Alcibiades was by the daughter of Cleisthenes named Agarista, whose son was Cleisthenes the Reformer, famous for introducing democracy in Athens in 508 BCE. This man had a granddaughter named Dinomache, and she married a great soldier named Cleinias, who died in 447 BCE at the Battle of Coronea. He having distinguished himself as a commander at a battle dated as 480 BCE. Alcibiades was the son of Cleinias and Dinomache, and the fifth full generation after Cleisthenes of Sicyon. When 160 years were those five generations, Alcibiades, born 465 BCE, dates Cleisthenes the tyrant as born 625. He was thus about 30 years of age in the Sacred War of 595. His death, given as 532, would make him about 93 years old, and a birth in 610 with Alcibiades. Born 450, would make Cleisthenes about 78 years old at his death. At his death, I'm just trying to see who is the birth in 610. Fifteen and 495. Okay, the birth of Cleisthenes then, in 610. Who's the son? Wait a minute. Hang on a second here. Cleisthenes the tyrant, born 625. His death. A birth in 610 with Alcibiades, born 450, would make Cleisthenes about 78 years old at death, and 15 in 595. Which are Cleisthenes? Who is this Cleisthenes? Okay. Whose son was Cleisthenes the Reformer? I'm thinking that should say, wait a minute, 595. Okay, the birth, now this is if the tyrant was born in 610. That's what it is, right? If the tyrant had, if Cleisthenes the Elder had been born in 610 instead of 625, that would make him 78 years old at his death instead of 93, and he'd be 15 years old at the war in 595. All of it seems reasonable. History of Herodotus, circa 440 BCE, edited by George Rawlinson, by Herodotus, Book 6, Erato, sections 126 to 131. That's a reference to the dating by Herodotus of Phidon as contemporary with Cleisthenes, and naming Phidon's son Leocedes as a suitor of Agarista. There we go. That's what that's from Herodotus. Also, that was footnote 3. Footnote 4 is the reference to a change. Okay, no, it's a reference to Shoshank the First and his reign, his year 1. That is from footnote 4, Trojan War Year-End Report 2015 by Rolf Ward Green et al., paragraphs 3.9, 3.10, and 9.9. And footnote 5, referring to that we wish to be most diligent and not to escape the truth, that refers to, in the footnote, a quote, a verse from the Bible at Ecclesiastes 8:8. Oh, really? Is that right? I read that today already. I looked at that today already, and I was convinced it said Ecclesiastes 5:5, but it doesn't. Okay. My eyes are fine. It's not that. I don't. My mind was apparently seeing something different. Now, before chronology, footnote 6, that's talking about the founding of Rome. That's what it's talking about. In concert with the end of the War of Troy, or the fall of Troy, that is, that 888 BCE date. That's from Before Chronology, History of Babylon, 2015. By Rolf Ward Green et al., Chapter 4, The Founding of Rome. The archaeology around the city of Rome proves this, and City 7 at Troy Hissarlik is only roughly, or not so precisely, dated as to disprove it. The Trojan War, dated as ending 1275 BCE, also fits perfectly the 433 years given by Dionysius of Halicarnassus for the 15 generations after that war to Rome's founding. A lot of information in there. And here's a painting by Marcello Vecchiarelli, oil on canvas, 1776 or 1777, Alcibiades being taught by Socrates. That's what the painting is of. Let's make it a little bigger if we can. That's certainly bigger. Let's make it a little smaller. There we are. Beautiful. Isn't it? Wow. Alcibiades on the left and Socrates on the right. The soldier with the helmet. Okay, so beautiful plumage on the helmet, the orange robe draped around his shoulders. Alcibiades and Socrates wearing far less glamorous garb, with a long white beard as well, and appearing to have in front of him a manuscript of some book or other. That's it for that study for today, little children. Guard your feet, Ecclesiastes 5. Now, Ecclesiastes 5:5, the scripture for today, better it is that you vow not than that you vow and do not pay. That's today's proverb for today from Ecclesiastes 5:5. And yesterday's proverb from Ecclesiastes 11, that was not a proverb so much as from Ecclesiastes, but I called it a proverb, of course, but I neglected to mention Ecclesiastes 11:2, that it was from Ecclesiastes, not from Proverbs itself. Now, Leviticus chapter 7, our reading from the Law of Moses for today, little children. And this is the law of the guilt offering. It is something most holy. In the place where they regularly slaughter the burnt offering, they will slaughter the guilt offering. And its blood one will sprinkle round about upon the altar. As for all its fat, He will present of it the fatty tail and the fat that covers the intestines, and the two kidneys and the fat that is upon them, the same as that upon the loins. And as for the appendage upon the liver, he will remove it along with the kidneys, and the priest must make them smoke on the altar as an offering made by fire to Jehovah. It is a guilt offering. Every male among the priests will eat it. In a holy place it will be eaten. It is something most holy, like the sin offering. So is the guilt offering. There is one law for them. The priest who will make an atonement for, a priest who will make atonement with it, his it will become. As for the priest who presents the burnt offering of any man, the skin of the burnt offering that he has presented to the priest will become his. And every grain offering that may be baked in the oven, and every one made in the deep fat kettle and upon the griddle, belongs to the priest who presents it. It will become his. But every grain offering that is moistened with oil or dry will come to be for all of Aaron's sons, for the one the same as for the other. Now this is the law of the communion sacrifice that anyone will present to Jehovah. If he would present it in expression of thanksgiving, then he must present, along with the sacrifice of thanksgiving, unfermented ring-shaped cakes moistened with oil, and unfermented wafers smeared with oil, and well-mixed fine flour as ring-shaped cakes moistened with oil. Along with ring-shaped cakes of leavened bread, he will present his offering, together with the thanksgiving sacrifice of his communion sacrifices. And out of it he must present one of each offering as a sacred portion to Jehovah. And as for the priest who sprinkles the blood of the communion sacrifices, it will become his. And the flesh of the thanksgiving sacrifice of his communion sacrifices is to be eaten on the day of his offering. He must not save up any of it until morning. And if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or a voluntary offering, it is to be eaten on the day of his presenting his sacrifice. And on the next day, what is left of it also may be eaten, but what is left of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day is to be burned with fire. However, if any of the flesh of his communion sacrifice should at all be eaten on the third day, the one presenting it will not be accepted with approval. It will not be put to his account. It will become a foul thing that the soul and the soul that eats some of it will answer for his error. And the flesh that may touch anything unclean is not to be eaten. It is to be burned with fire. As for the flesh, everybody clean may eat the flesh. And the soul who eats the flesh of the communion sacrifice, which is for Jehovah, while his uncleanness is upon him, that soul must be cut off from his people. And in case the soul touches anything unclean, the uncleanness of a man or an unclean beast or any unclean loathsome thing, and actually eats some of the flesh of the communion sacrifice, which is for Jehovah, that soul must be cut off from his people. And Jehovah continued to speak to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, you must not eat any fat of a bull or a young ram or a goat. The fat of a body already dead and the fat of an animal torn to pieces may be used for anything else conceivable, but you must not eat it at all. For anyone eating fat from the beast from which he presents it as an offering made by fire to Jehovah, the soul that eats must be cut off from his people. And you must not eat any blood in any places where you dwell, whether that of fowl or that of beast. Any soul who eats any blood, that soul must be cut off from his people." And Jehovah went on to speak to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, he who presents his communion sacrifice to Jehovah will bring his offering to Jehovah from his communion sacrifice. His hands will bring as Jehovah's offerings made by fire the fat upon the breast. He will bring it with the breast to wave it to and fro as a wave offering before Jehovah. And the priest must make the fat smoke on the altar, but the breast must become Aaron's and his sons. And you will give the right leg as a sacred portion to the priest from your communion sacrifices. That one of Aaron's sons who presents the blood of the communion sacrifices and the fat, the right leg, will become his as a portion. For the breast of the wave offering and the leg of the sacred portion I do take from the sons of Israel from their communion sacrifices, and I shall give them to Aaron the priest and his sons as a regulation to time indefinite from the sons of Israel. This was the priestly share of Aaron and the priestly share of his sons from Jehovah's offerings made by fire on the day that he presented them to act as priests to Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded to give it to them on the day of his anointing them from among the sons of Israel. It is a statute to time indefinite for their generations. This is the law concerning the burnt offering, the grain offering, and the sin offering, and the guilt offering, and the installation sacrifice, and the communion sacrifice, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses in Mount Sinai in the day of his commanding the sons of Israel to present their offerings to Jehovah in the wilderness of Sinai. And that's the end of Leviticus chapter 7. Very, very detailed and fascinating material in the law of Moses, is it not? Mark chapter 7. Now the Pharisees and some of the scribes that had come from Jerusalem gathered about Jesus. And when they saw some of his disciples eat their meal with defiled hands, that is, unwashed hands. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands up to the elbow, holding fast the tradition of the men of former times. And when back from market, they do not eat unless they cleanse themselves by sprinkling. And there are many other traditions that they have received to hold fast. Baptisms of cups and pitchers and copper vessels. So these Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why is it your disciples do not conduct themselves according to the tradition of the men of former times, but they take their meal with defiled hands?" He said to them, "Isaiah aptly prophesied about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far removed from me. It is in vain that they keep worshiping me, because they teach as doctrines commands of men.' Letting go the commandment of God, you hold fast the tradition of men." Further, he went on to say to them, "Adroitly you set aside the commandment of God in order to retain your tradition. For example, Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and 'Let him that reviles father or mother end up in death.' But you men say, 'If a man says to his father or his mother, whatever I have by which you may get benefit from me is korban, that is, a gift dedicated to God,' you men no longer let him do a single thing for his father or his mother. And thus you make the word of God invalid by your tradition which you handed down. And many things similar to this you do." So calling the crowd to him again, he proceeded to say to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and get the meaning. There's nothing from outside a man that passes into him that can defile him, but the things that issue forth out of a man are the things that defile a man." Now, when he had entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples began to question him respecting the illustration. So he said to them, "Are you also without perception like them? Are you not aware that nothing from outside that passes into a man can defile him, since it passes not into his heart, but into his intestines, and it passes out into the sewer?" Thus he declared all foods clean. Further he said, "That which issues forth out of a man is what defiles a man, for from inside, out of the heart of men, injurious reasonings issue forth, fornications, thieveries, murders, adulteries, covetings, acts of wickedness, deceit, loose conduct and envious eye, blasphemy, haughtiness, unreasonableness. All these wicked things issue forth from within and defile a man." From there he rose up and went into the regions of Tyre and Sidon. And he entered into a house and did not want anyone to get to know it. Yet he could not escape notice. But immediately a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him and came and prostrated herself at his feet. The woman was a Grecian, a Syrophoenician, nationally, and she kept asking him to expel the demon from her daughter. But he began by saying to her, "First, let the children be satisfied, for it is not right to take the bread of the children and throw it to the little dogs." In reply, however, she said to him, "Yes, sir, and yet the little dogs underneath the table eat the crumbs of the little children." At that he said to her, "Because of saying this, go, The demon has gone out of your daughter. So she went away to her home and found the young child laid on the bed and the demon gone out. Now, coming back out of the regions of Tyre, remember Hiram was the king of Tyre or Phoenicia. He went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee up through the midst of the regions of Decapolis. Here they brought him a man deaf and with a speech impediment, and they entreated him to lay his hand upon him. And he took him away from the crowd privately and put his fingers into the man's ears, and after spitting he touched his tongue. And with a look up into heaven he sighed deeply and said to him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. Well, his hearing powers were opened and the impediment of his tongue was loosed. And he began speaking normally. With that, he charged them not to tell anyone, but the more he would charge them, that much more they would proclaim it. Indeed, they were being astounded in a most extraordinary way, and they said, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the speechless speak. And that's the end of Mark chapter 7, little children. It's a great pleasure to share that with you today. I love you. Indeed, I do. It's June 7th, 2023, 1747 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green, I want to say goodbye, but I have some news for you. Interesting news. I want to show you something here. We're gonna try to show you this if I can here. Where is it? Here it is. It's UTM. Oh, it's not showing up. Is it? Oh, yes, it is. I think it will. I think it will be correct, yeah, when I reverse the image. Is that true? No. I don't know. I'm seeing this. Hang on a second. It won't show up correctly. I don't know how to show it in reverse. It's okay. You can see it as a negative image. It's fine. But this is Windows XP running on Apple Silicon. I finally got it figured out how to install it with the help of a website which is the one that provides the program UTM. That website provides the information that helps you to install different programs. And at first I was trying for many, many hours to install Windows 10. And, well, I decided I wouldn't install Windows 11, first of all. But then I finally realized I don't want Windows 10 at all. It's too bulky and cumbersome, and it does too many things that I don't want. I just want to run these simple programs. So here we have, in Windows XP, eSword, the eSword program where we can look at the script, the scriptures, Zechariah 4 and 3, two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl and the other upon the left side thereof. That is from the JPS translation, the Jewish Publication Society. But I can click on the International Standard Version. It says in Zechariah, can I scroll? I'm having trouble scrolling. I can't see what I'm clicking. Oh, there it is. It's hard to see it because I'm looking at a negative image here. Two olive trees are near it, one on the right side of the bowl and one on the left. That's the International Standard Version. If we went to the Geneva Version, it would say, as it does, and two olive trees over it, one upon the right side of the bowl and the other upon the left side of it, thereof, the left side thereof. But it's in Old English, very Old English, that translation. The literal version by J.P. Green, Sr., says, and two olive trees are beside it, one on the right of the bowl and one on its left. So you see, we have all these different translations that we can draw upon. We can even go to, for example, if we looked at the New Testament, let's say the book of Hebrews, chapter, 7. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, the one meeting Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessing him. And it goes on. What I just want to show you is what we can do here with some of these additional translations. We have the Apostolic Bible Polyglot, Greek with not footnotes, but superscripts. And if we click on the superscript, we see the first word here, whatever it is. You can click on it, double-click it, perhaps. And it then appears down here in Strong's Concordance below. It's the Greek word 3,778. Otos. Otos. Ote. It sounds like auto or something like that. And we'll see what it says. What does it mean? Something up above. It means this. Oh, right. It's auto, like it's itself. It means self. So this, in other words, the same as these, or the same woman, the same man. It means this sort of thing, that word. But wait a minute, that's not the word though. There's another word appearing there also, gamma, alpha, rho, which is gar. The word gar, and that doesn't show up. That's interesting. It doesn't show up here. All we see at the beginning here is for this word is the first part of that. Otos in Greek. For this Melchizedek, in other words, the same one. Right? And gar, what does gar mean? Not sure. Oh, here it is. It would be this other number here, I think, possibly. Let's find out here it is, gar. So it's G1063, and when we look at the definition there, primary particle, because, but even, for indeed, no doubt this Melchizedek, it's saying, gar, just like in, I believe it's French that has the word gar, that means the same sort of thing. Or is it French, or is it German? I think it might be German I'm thinking of. Yeah, gar nichts. I think it's German. It means sort of truly. No doubt. Right, yeah, that's what it means. Okay, that's amazing. So the other thing, so this is one of the things you can do with this program. You can also look at commentaries, so we can go over here. So let's look at Barnes, the commentary of Barnes on Hebrews 7 and 1. For this Melchizedek, he says, compare the notes on Hebrews 5 and 6. And then he goes on to write about that. So I can drag it once I've clicked on a window. This is running Windows on a Mac system, an Apple Silicon, M1 Apple Silicon Mac. That's what I'm running it on. And I can scroll with the two fingers on the trackpad of the laptop. Got an M1 Max, MacBook Pro. I'm running it on that. So, off an external drive, actually. But there it is. I can scroll. I can read. I can look at the Jameson Fawcett commentary. Right there. That's what this is. Yeah, the scroll works backwards on Windows XP to the way I'm used to. So, I keep getting confused about which way I need to scroll to get it to scroll. That's what the delay is there. So that's all we need to show you there. I think that's an amazing thing. But there's more, though. Let's minimize this. There is more, so let's show you the other thing. The other amazing thing here is I can run this program finally again that I wanted to run for a long time, it seems, quite some time, and that's planetary, lunar, and stellar visibility. It's running, it's telling us, right here. Calculation is running, please wait. Right? So, when it's done, it should pop open. So, here it is. It's popping open. It's showing the moon and the year 2007 in this case, but we can go back to any year in history. We could go, you know, let's try it. Oh, wait a minute. Is it not working? What's happening with my keyboard? Oh no, oh no. It's interesting, it's not working. Let's drag there and let's type in some numbers. Does it work? Oh, I don't have data entry. That can't be right. I didn't believe. I believe I did have data entry in the past. So it's not working at the moment. That's unfortunate. Let's see. Well, let's try delete. Let's try delete. What happens? I don't want to delete it, do I? But we have here the first visibility for that year, 2007, for each of the months of the year. What time the sun rose and set. Or the rising or the setting, one or the other. It's one or the other. And the moon rising or setting, one or the other. Depending on whether it's first or last visibility, it gives either sunrise or sunset. But it gives first and last visibility for the moon from the location that's given here in the place, which is currently it's not, I can't ascertain, I don't see it right here. I can't see where the place is. We could change to Berlin, Germany, Babylon. Let's go to Babylon. It will recalculate these numbers. It's already calculated them, but it's displaying something here. It's going to calculate something that takes a while to calculate. But these are the new numbers for Babylon, and that's what is being displayed. So that's what happens in this program. Now that's 2007. Why can I not get the... What's going on? I don't have keyboard entry. That's not possible. I know I have keyboard entry in this. Okay, where is... Are we not running eSword again? Did I close eSword? I can't find eSword. Well, anyway, I've installed it, which is very, very huge accomplishment for me to have done that because I've been wanting to do this and haven't been able to do it for a very long time. But let's look at Solex. Solex version 12, for example. I think it's better to run version 10 because it can make it much bigger. So let's run version 10. I can't see what I'm running because it's in negative. Is this it here? Yeah. That's it. Okay. Solex properties. What? Strange. This is very strange. It's not running the program. It's just showing me the properties. None of these strange behaviors have I experienced yet until now. Let's see. Can we run eSort or is it going to do something? No, it's doing something strange too. So I clearly have to reboot. So let's reboot this virtual machine. If we can. And we'll just see. Then it'll probably work. That's what I'm thinking. Turn off. Let's say restart. So this is how it reboots. Takes a little while, but it's so exciting to me that I can run Windows, even just XP, which is a very ancient version of Windows. But it's so exciting to me that I can run it because I can run these programs, which I couldn't run hardly at all, anyway, on very, very, in very restricted ways, could I run them at all on the Apple Silicon. So let's see if this is going to run now. I don't know. I've made duplicates of these systems, and this may be the duplicate that's running now, actually. So the original one might work differently or better. Who knows? I don't know at this point. But this is how it boots Windows. Look, it's fairly slow because it's got to do some emulation. It takes a long time to do it. So let's see what we're doing with Windows or with Solex now. Yeah, it's running. Set window to maximum size. Yes. There it is. Solex 10.2. We press any key to continue. And then it asks us which star. Okay, we go the maximum magnitude, and we just say default by pressing enter, or we just say spacebar. I think we just press enter, actually. Let's see. Reading star library, and we select which library we want. Set number one. We press number one. Then we can enter a date. So we say minus, 608. That would be the year 609. And we say enter. And that's going to say one day. We just say enter if we want to accept that one day for the interval with the tab button, tab key. There it's going back to 60. That's fast. So there we have some calculations for the planets. If we press W, though, we get a depiction. This would be black. If you're seeing it white, it's going to be a black background where the planets are. And then we can select other things such as we can go tab, one thing. Tab. Is that working? What's going on? I think they're moving. No, it's not changing the day. Tab is not the right thing. I think we want spacebar. Yeah, spacebar, not tab. It's spacebar, but it said tab for some reason. So we go spacebar, and we see them moving. All the planets are there. The moon going fast. All the planets are there. But we can put, maybe we can change the color just here if we want to. I'm not sure. But we can go, we want to say topocentric, off or on. Star. We want the stars. We can show the stars. Star colors, star names. You can put the names on there. We can show a grid, or we can go full screen like that, and then we can still show the planets and the moon moving. Planets move, the stars stay still, and the moon moves very fast. So when the moon comes into view, you see it moving very fast. There it comes in the middle now, going to the left. Off the left end and onto the right. That's the way it's portrayed here. We go window again. What happens? Come back to this. We go escape, full screen maybe? Or how do we go back from full screen? We click on full screen maybe? F. Was F full screen? I think it might have been. No. Well, that's interesting. It wants to write something to a file because I pushed F. Let's escape. All right, now we're back to, we're still at full screen. Escape again. Okay, we're not full screen anymore. But we've also gone back to the beginning. And we have to enter a new date now somehow. We escaped from our whole system. But, you know, that's how it works. So, we are done showing that particular program. Let's close it. We also have version 11 here and version 12, of Solex, which is a program that calculates these values incrementally. So you see, it takes some time to do the calculation. To move from one date in history to another, it takes many seconds in some cases. If you want to go 2,000 years, it could take 30 seconds to make that calculation. It's going faster now because I'm using Apple Silicon to do the calculations. But on a typical system, how it used to run in the past, it was very slow. So that's one fact. Now, we were trying to get ESORD. Well, I demonstrated ESORD successfully, but let's get planetary, lunar, and stellar visibility running. And let's see if we can show it correctly now. It would be good if we could. I think we can. Let's not do anything too fancy. Let's just try and get it running. And then show, once it loads, it's going to load and then show the first and last visibility of the moon on the right. And then we can say, let's put a new date in here if we can. It works. Oh, great. Minus 608 will go to the same place, which is equivalent to 609 BCE. We press enter. It recalculates. And it's showing us in minus 608 or 609, that is, BCE, the first and last visibility of the moon for every month of that year on the right. And it's calculating the graphical way of displaying it on the left here, which takes time. So that's the program. We can also choose which place we want to be at, as I showed you before. We can also show, we don't have to show the moon. We can show Mercury, the planet Mercury, or, you know, the planet Venus, and show its first and last visibility too. Either of those, any of a number of planets. There, the calculation's finally complete. That was slow. But this is because it's an emulated system. It would have been faster running it on a Windows system than it is here, because it's emulating. Now here's Venus, Mars, Jupiter. Let's go do Jupiter. It's going to calculate Jupiter. There it is, first and last visibility. The chronicle rising and the cosmical setting of Jupiter. And also it shows graphically what these things are like on the left there. That's all in the year 609 BCE. So isn't that fabulous? These are the programs I can't run on native Apple silicon. I have to run them in a program called UTM, in a virtual machine which is emulating Windows XP. And I was greatly helped by the UTM website. But I also watched many videos, and I fumbled around with Windows 10 unsuccessfully for a very long time first. So I knew a little bit about how these things are done before I tried to install Windows XP. That's all. I think that's all we need to do. I'm really happy to show that to you. I'm really excited about it, too. Maybe I can make that image in DaVinci look correct. I'll try and do that if I can when I'm doing the editing. But remember to seek first the kingdom. May Jehovah bless you, and all the necessary things will be added to you. And imagine what it was like for Jesus to face these Pharisees who were such hypocrites and who followed their own traditions and thereby invalidated the Word of God. So for me, it's Moppy and Crow saying bye for now.